Let's resume, and we'll be getting into Project 4 info. One thing I want to talk about before that is because really what your Project 4 is going to amount to is creating and verifying two kinds of information. One, you're pretty familiar with already, called types. And types are the usual integer, char, etc. And there's also a collateral piece of information. I mean, something additional called kind. And kind essentially says, what kind of object is it? Examples are, you might have something that's a variable. Or you might have something that's a constant, that's a different kind. Or you may have something that's a method name, or a parameter name, or a label name. And as we're processing identifiers and doing checking, it oftentimes amounts to, is this a valid type? And also, does it have a valid kind? And as I'll show you in a couple of minutes, many combinations of type and kind are actually sensible. So what your project for the most part will be is process declarations, store type and kind information about the declaration, and when you see an identifier, look it up in the symbol table and check the type or kind within the context. So let me show you some of this. So this type and kind information will be stored in the symbol table. It will also, for convenience, be added to the AST. So at least one fellow yesterday in office hours noticed that the AST in Project 4 is a little different, that I give you for starters, is a little different than the one in Project 3 because it has, at the expression level, type and kind information added. That was essentially to save you problems and to make sure that the CSX Lite type checker worked. So when you're moving ahead to do Project 4, be sure to look at the new type check, the new AST, and make sure that you copy forward the type and kind information that's included in it. So here, for example, are valid types. And each one of those would be a flag that says, when I see this object, be it a variable, an expression, a constant, whatever, it could be of type integer, int, or boolean, or character, char. It can be string. In our language, string means string literal. We do not have string variables. Some languages do. So we have string literals, primarily so when we do prints, we can print out messages conveniently. Otherwise, writing a program that was readable would be very difficult. We have type void. That's typically used in methods that are used as subprograms rather than functions. So a void method means I'm not returning a value. I'm simply being called for my side effects. Error. We have something called an error type. And this is actually useful as you're type checking if you find something's an error. A great example would be that you have an undeclared identifier. What's the type of the identifier? It's undeclared. That's erroneous. But the problem is once you know that, how do you stop cascading errors which in some sense are meaningless? So suppose I have an undeclared identifier called undecl. So you're going along, you see undecl, you look them up in the symbol table and say, hey, he's not declared. I'm going to go ahead and give an error message. Error, undecl is undeclared. Okay, but now he's in this context. How do you check plus one with respect to undeclared? If it were a valid type, it'd be valid. If it was an invalid type, for example, booleans cannot add, if you have one added to it, it'd be invalid. But it's undeclared. So what do I do? So one common trick, not trick, but approach, is when you see something that's erroneous, undeclared is erroneous, its type is not integer, it's not char, it's not bool, it's not string, it's error. And there's a rule in checking that if you're checking something whose type is error, you cannot generate any further error messages. Why? Well, you don't know what that should have been, so how can the error message be meaningful? If you're saying, hey, you can't add one to undecl, all it's really saying, it's not saying anything beyond the fact that I don't know what undecl is, so I can't really check that. So you can use error type as a way of saying, I've checked so far, this part is erroneous, but don't do any further error messages because they probably won't be meaningful. So that's something that we may use. I wanted to show you that. And we have unknown. Unknown is just a thing there before you ever do any computation. It's always good to have an initial value that represents the fact that you don't know. It's not necessarily erroneous, but say when I'm first starting, I don't know the type of an identifier. until the declaration is complete. So I can use unknown as an initial value, saying I will at some point know the type, but at this stage it's unknown. And normally unknown means if you're trying to check it, that means you haven't had a chance to do a full analysis and get the type available yet. So you may want to use unknown in this case, that I should have a type at some point, but it's unknown as yet. We also have this orthogonal, that is independent, concept of kind. And here are some suggested values for kind. Something can be a var. That's either a field or a local. Var means it's a scalar variable. Scalar means non-array. Variable means you may assign to it. We may have something called a value. A value is something that has a value but is not changeable. So a constant, for example, is a value. But what is the kind of the expression a plus b? It's got a type. But what's its kind? And the kind is value. It's not a variable because you can't say a plus b gets 10. So in this particular case, value means that you may read the value, but you may not change it. Constants and expressions have values. You have an array. An array has a special property that it may be indexed by using square brackets. Other things may not be. Arrays are always variables because we have no way of creating constant arrays. We have a scalar parameter, and that means that it's inside a subprogram. Knowing that it's a parameter may be important, but it acts pretty much like a local variable. It has a type, but it's a parameter, and that means we know it was passed in by a caller. We have an array parameter. That's an array that was passed in as a parameter by the caller. Array parameters are special in that we do not know the size of an array parameter until runtime. Why is that? Well, normally an array has a size. I declare something to be an array of size 10 or an array of size 20. But when I declare an array parameter, I simply say it's going to be an array of unknown size. Now, the question is, why am I doing that? And the answer is I'm kind of forced into it, because otherwise I would be forced to put the size of a parameter, an array parameter, in the method definition, and that means the method would only work for one particular size. You can imagine how worthless a method that was a sort would be. If, I'll sort arrays of integer, but they got to be size 100. 99 is no good. 101 is no good. Got to be 100. That's foolish. So what happens is we allow array parameters, know the base type, like ints, but we don't know its size until runtime. What that means, when the parameter is passed in, it has a size, and then that size is potentially available. So that's why we do that, and that's why knowing something's an array parameter is useful. We have a method that can either be a procedure or a function. If it's a procedure, it's got a type in front of it, like int method. If it's a procedure, it's got a void method. So void methods don't return a type. Typed functions do. Typed methods do. And we have labels, which I talked about a bit ago, and they appear only on a while loop. Now, the interesting thing about this is, as you create complex type and kind combinations, they oftentimes represent something you may actually see in a program. So, for example, if I have something its type is Boolean and kind is value, then I know that was created as a Boolean constant or a Boolean expression. Like, is A less than B? It generates true or false. Its type is Boolean and its kind is value, because once it's computed, it may not be changed. If I have type equal void and kind equal method, well, that's a procedure, something that's called as a statement for its side effects. One case where doing type checking on procedures and functions takes some care is in the case where we have parameters. And I warned you about that. When you're implementing type checking, you might want to save parameters for last. That is, initially just type check methods that take no parameters, and then once that's working, add parameters as an extension. So the way that'll work is, when a method's declared, you're going to have to remember what its parameter information is. I warned you about that earlier. So just saying I'm an integer method is not enough, because when I do a call, I'm going to have some parameters. So you got to tell me how many parameters I had, and what their type is, int, bool, char, whatever, and what their kind is. Kind is typically either a scalar parameter or an array parameter. So the way we'll work this is, when a method is declared, we'll actually create in the actual symbol table entry its name, its return type, and a list of zero or more pairs that say, here are the parameters. First parameter is this type and kind. Second parameter is this type and kind, and so on. And when I see a call, I'll create a list of type and kind parameters at the point of call and compare the two to see that the parameter usage is consistent. So here's a good example. Suppose I happen to have, in this case, the definition of P and says it takes two parameters. One is an integer A, and B is a Boolean array. Remember, the empty brackets mean I'm an array, but as I said a moment ago, I don't give you the size. It says I'll take a Boolean array of any size, and inside the method, I'll figure out the size and utilize it. So in this particular case, and I have a call, and in this case, it says, okay, I'm going to call with the parameters 1 and false. So I look up P, say, is there a definition of P? That's a method. Yes, there is. And now the harder question, are the parameters correct? One part is easy, is namely the number of parameters correct. Top guy has 2, the call has 2, so that part is okay. If I had too few or too many parameters, I give an error message. No error, this procedure call has 3 parameters, the definition only has 2. Or something along that, depending on how precise you care to be. So what's going to happen is, up top, when I create A, I create a list. And that should have been on one line, but it didn't quite fit. It says I have a list that has 2 entries in it for the declaration. One's an integer, and it takes a scalar parameter. The second is a Boolean, and it takes an array parameter. I go to the bottom where I could fit this, and I said, look at P's call. It's got an integer that's a value. It's a constant, and it's got a Boolean that's a constant. And now I say, okay, is this call correct? Names match up, the length match up. I say, can I have an integer value used as an integer parameter? The answer is yes, you can. A value can always be passed in. The second one's, I have a Boolean value where I'm expecting a Boolean array. That's no good. A scalar and array are 2 different things. If I pass in false, for example, I cannot subscript false to get false sub 1 or false sub 2. That's not going to work. So I give an error message. This says, saying error, second parameter in this call does not match the declared type of the parameter. Or phrase it as you want. So that's something you're going to need to include in, and that's one of the more complex things. Okay, so what I'm going to do, and most of this will be next week, but you're going to go ahead and look ahead, is that you're going to have to do a series of type checks. In fact, let me do one, and then we'll go to the CSX definition. So what's going to happen is, as you're type checking, you're going to be walking the AST tree, the one you built. And what you'll do is you say, okay, I have to type check various kinds of nodes. Each kind of node is going to have a different kind of type check, and what I've done is summarize on a slide or two what it is you have to do. It's not quite the full code, but it's pretty much the logic you're going to have to do. So here's a very simple one that says, I'm declaring an identifier to be a variable, and here's this type. This is the version that does not have initialization. There's kind a couple of slides deeper that do have initialization. So what do I need to do? First thing I need to do is check to make sure that the identifier name, that's an identNode.id name, is it already declared? Is this an erroneous multiple declaration? So what I do is I look them up in the symbol table and see, is that declared in the local symbol table? If it is, I give an error message, error, this particular identifier is already declared. Otherwise, I'm good and I continue on. So assuming that he's not already declared, I'm going to put him in the symbol table. Well, what is this? Its type is obtained from the type node. Do I have to check to see if the type node is correct? The answer is no. One of the nice things about the parser is it was able to make sure that the thing you put in the context of a type was a valid type. If you put a Weibullfitzer in there, it's not going to know that Weibullfitzer is a type. It's going to give you an error that a Weibullfitzer is not legal in this context. So we know the type is legal, so we enter him in and say, okay, he's a variable, that's his kind, and his type is whatever the type node said it was, guaranteed to be correct, and we put that in the actual symbol table entry. And that's all we need to do. What I showed you is a subset of the more complex one where I have an initializer. So this says, declare integer I equals 10, for example. So what do I do now? is part of what I did before, but a bit more. Again, I checked that the identifier is not already declared in my local scope. If he is, that's a multiple declaration error. Otherwise, I get prepared to put something in the symbol table. I type check the expression. My notation here is that if it's a square box, that's a single node. If it's a triangle, that's kind of meant to be a tree. And I don't know how complex that tree could be. It could be as simple as a literal, but it could also be something like a limit plus one, or even possibly a call to a function, although that would be a rarity. So I type check the tree. Whenever I type check an expression, I get a type and a kind. So I'm going to type check the tree, getting the type and kind. That includes the possibility of error, as I said previously, but I'm hoping that it's a type and a kind that's compatible with assigning to the variable I'm declaring. So I've got to check that the initial value's type is equal to the type node declared. So if I'm trying to initialize it with false, but I'm declaring it as an integer, that's a no-no. Can't do that because Boolean and integer are different types. I check that the initial value's kind is a scalar. I would not allow an integer variable to be assigned an array because an array is not a scalar. So check that. And assuming that works, that means the assignment of the expression into the new variable is valid, then I put him in the symbol table as before. His type is the type out of the type node, and his kind is variable. So there's many more of these, and I'll get to those next week. But what I want to do is change and go into the actual assignment and start talking a little bit about that. So what you should do is get a hold of the copy of the handout I gave out earlier. Did anybody miss getting a copy? So let me talk a little bit about what you're going to be doing then. And essentially what I showed you just a moment ago, namely at various nodes doing a bit of checking, is what you have to do. The slides that I haven't gotten to yet, but you're certainly at liberty to read them anytime you care to, show essentially the logic structure you need to do. But what I want to get into now is the commandments. So what's going to happen is, and by the way, if you're working in a team, this is an ideal project for teammates, because what you're going to do is go to the second and third pages where we have all these bullets and divide them between yourselves. Because each of these checks, for the most part, is independent of the others. So one of them will be checking that arrays are proper. Another will be checking that methods are proper. Another will be checking that declarations are proper. And what these bullets do is essentially give you the rules. So just like Moses came down, you know, with 10 tablets. I guess they stopped doing the 10 commandments on Easter. They used to do that every Easter where he'd come down with the great tablets. But now, in this case, we're going to have our poor approximation. Is let me slide this down. It's just starting at the very bottom. And by the way, you do not have to do them in this order at all. So this is, you know, just think of them as a list of thou shalts or thou shalt nots, and they can be done in any order. So a good way to do this is get a copy of this, paper or electronic, and at each stage for the bullet, decide what AST node you want to check that in, and I'll tell you if you have questions, and check it off as you've gone ahead and added code to the type checker that verifies that these rules are satisfied. So for example, one of them says arithmetic operators may be applied to integer or char values. The result is of type int. That means, by the way, following the odd rules that C has, you can say like a character plus one or a character plus two. What do you imagine that might mean? Right, you're just moving it on. So A plus two would be C, for example, in the character codes. So just following that. So this is the rule. So you're going to have to go ahead and say both types have to be integer or char. So left guy's got to be integer or char. Right guy's going to be integer or char. The result's going to be int. It says arithmetic operators. Uh-oh. What AST node takes care of arithmetic operators? Binary op node. You've seen that guy plenty of times by now. So in binary op node, and that's one of the things I have listed deeper down in my slides for next week, is that this thing would be checked. So in there, and I think if you go ahead and look at the slide, I probably already have that logic in. So that's one. Another one says that for increment and decrement operators, these may only be applied to integer or characters. So numeric types, you can't increment or decrement a Boolean. And again, a fairly simple one. And there's an AST node for the increment and decrement, and that's where that would go. So each of those, you want to make a little note of what AST node, and then at some point do it. Many of these are pretty easy. Some of them are a tad more complex. So logical operators may only be applied to Boolean values, and a result is Boolean. So I can't do and or with respect to integers or chars, only Booleans, and a result is Boolean. Relational operators may be applied only to a pair of arithmetic values, integer or char, or to a pair of Boolean values. The result is always Boolean. That means you can ask whether true is equal to false. You can even ask, is false less than true? What would you imagine the answer is? Equal makes sense. What would make sense for Booleans for inequality? Should false be less than or equal, or less than or greater than true? Well, what's false normally represented as? Zero. And what's true normally represented as? One. And there's your answer. So a colleague here, Marvin Solomon, used to have a great rule that he'd quote to his classes, namely the law of least astonishment. And that is, don't change what makes sense unless you really, really have to. This really drives people crazy is everything you ever learn says this should be the way it goes, and somebody's gone and changed it the other way. So let's see. Relational operators can be applied to Boolean, and there it is, false is less than true. I talked about scope, so let's replay that. The scope of a field is all the fields in the method that follow it. Forward references to fields are not yet allowed. That's easy. That means you put it in the symbol table at the point you find it, and then any future usages beyond that can find that in the symbol table. The scope of a method is its own body and all methods in the class. Recursive calls are allowed. Forward references to methods not yet allowed are allowed. Remember, that means is that you process the headers of all the methods first, put them in the symbol table for the class, then process the bodies on a second pass, and now you have all the method names available, and you can check whether they're valid or not. Scope of a local variable is from its point of declaration. Formal parameters, that is the names inside the parameter list, are act as local variables inside the body. That has to be the case, otherwise the body could not look at the value or change the value of a parameter. Except for method names and labels, there's only one identifier declarations per scope, be it in the class, the method, or the block. If a ready identifier is already declared in an outside scope, the redeclaration is legal. Again, we've seen that before. We did project one. Method names may be overloaded. All overloaded names must have the same return type, including void. This is a little more restricted than Java. In Java, you could have methods that are overloaded, some of which return int, and the others which return Boolean, for example, as long as their parameter list change are different. In our case, to keep it simpler, a method that's overloaded always returns the same type, but it may have multiple definitions depending on the actual combinations of parameters in it. I'd say the type of a constant is the type of the expression that defines it. You may have noticed that when you were doing the parser. I don't say that I have an integer constant. I just say I have a constant equal to something. The something has a type, and that automatically appears, becomes the type of what I'm declaring. It just seemed to be kind of silly to say int c equals 1, for example. Well, 1's a constant integer, so it's got to be int. So I didn't think the need to change it to check was all that useful. So type of control expression in an if or a while must be Boolean. So it means when you're processing if statements or while statements, you type check the expression, you say, oh, by the way, you've got to be Boolean and you've got to be a scalar. Integer, bool, and char values, char arrays, and string literals may all be printed. So when you're type checking the print lists, that's what you have to do. Only integers and chars may be read. What if I wanted to read a Boolean? How would I go about doing that? Can't do it directly, so what would I do? Probably the easiest way is to read an integer 0 or 1 and typecast it into a Boolean. Typecasts do exist. You can change a Boolean into an int or vice versa via typecast. Types of assignments left and right-hand side must be identical. If they're not identical, you're going to have an error, but you're allowed to do typecasting. So if I wanted, for example, to assign a character into an integer, I couldn't do that directly, but I could say character, typecast that into an integer, getting this internal character code, and then do the assignment. So I could do it indirectly, but that's the way I'd have to do it. The size of an array parameter is not known at compile time. Therefore, all size restrictions are enforced at runtime if you're an array parameter. The types of an actual parameter and the corresponding formal parameter must be identical. If I want an int, I got to pass an int. If I want a bool, I got to pass a boolean. Assignment to constant identifiers is illegal. Constant really does mean constant. Arrays are passed as reference parameters. That, by the way, is more a code generation thing. But if you're just wondering, that means when I pass an array, I do not make a physical copy of it. I actually go ahead and pass a reference to it as part of the actual code generation. Only identifiers denoting procedures may be called as statements. Only identifiers functions may be called in expressions. Remember, we have two different kinds of nodes. We have a call node and a function call node. Here's why we have the two of them, to be able to distinguish those bottom two bullets. Return statements with an expression may only appear in functions. The expression returned by a function, a return statement, must match the declaration of the type. Return statements within an expression, without an expression, may only appear in procedures. We do not require a return statement at the bottom of a method. What happens is that code generation will put an implicit return as needed at the bottom of code. So you can follow the convention in functions or methods that you execute the body, and when you hit the bottom, you automatically return. Some languages make you put a return in there. It's easy enough to put an implicit one at the bottom. And of course, you can have returns in other places controlled by conditionals. No, for functions, what it does is actually is it returns a default value, a la Java. So if you have a function, it returns an integer, and you don't say it, it returns a zero. Boolean would be false, and character would be the null character. And that's not totally satisfactory, but it kind of is essentially the same as Java, so it will be consistent. Let's see. So expressions about typecasting, essentially you can typecast one type to the other, as indicated there. An identifier may label a while statement. That's label business I showed you a bit ago. There's no requirement that the label not conflict with other declarations, because a label can only be used in breaks and continues. If an identifier labels multiple nested whiles, the inner or nearest one that's defined properly is used. An identifier in a break or continue must denote a label, and it must be inside of a while loop where the label is actually accessible. So it must appear in the body of the while loop. We'll show you how to enforce that next time. And we're almost there. A void method of no parameters named main must be declared somewhere in the class. That's where execution will begin. The size of an array must be greater than zero. So you're not allowed to declare an array of size zero. I didn't really see much need for it. And only expressions of type integer or char may be used to index arrays. And that's it. Still plenty of stuff there, but so what your job is going to be, and essentially what you want to do is probably take the CSX-like type checker I have, look at that, and then look at expanding it bit by bit. For example, adding in extra operators, just as you did in the parser, is not too bad. You already have an assignment statement you want, may want to expand that. You may want to add some new constructs like ifs or loops. And the most complex things, and probably the things you might want to add last, are method calls and method declarations. Oh, and here's my timer, so that's a good place to break. So remember, for most of you, there's an exam on Thursday. The TA will be in on Wednesday, and I'll be checking mail and Piazza. And I certainly hope to see most of you on Thursday.